us.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Mark Schoen, a sex educator and filmmaker, last year, too long, Dr. Mark, his website is sexsmartfilms.com, and it is truly the Netflix of sex education, and I can tell you firsthand, a sex educator's dream come true. Welcome to the program. Welcome back, Dr. Mark. Hello.
Thank you, Dr. Diana.
Yes, we've known each other, I'm going to guess, about 30 years, something like that. Maybe a little, yes. A little less than that, but a long time.
That's the right neighborhood.
Yeah, the right neighborhood. We see each other at conferences, and you've been on this program several times, and we've seen each other socially, too, and that's always been fun. So how many films do you have on your sex, because last year you were on the show, and at that point you had 430 films on your website.
Well, now we have just under 600.
Under 600, okay.
Yes, just 590 some odd films from 52 different countries.
Wow, and that's impressive.
Yes. Well, it's very telling. Cultural issues, what is acceptable and unacceptable dealing with sexuality in different cultures.
Mm-hmm. Because you also have commercials from so many different countries, which really reveal a lot of what's going on in that country's culture, right?
Yes. I have condom commercials and HIV public service announcements from over 50 countries. And it's very telling, especially if you take data related to teenage pregnancy and HIV rates.
Yeah, expand on that a little bit, and then I want to ask you, I know, but I want our listeners to know how you got into sex education.
Okay.
But expand a little bit on that, because that's pretty important. Scandinavian countries are quite open and liberal, and that makes a difference in terms of sex education, doesn't it?
Well, if you look at European countries, which include Scandinavian countries, the HIV rate and the teen pregnancy rate in the United States is 3 to 6 times higher.
Wow.
Which is shocking.
Yeah, it is.
And if you go to the website and look at the commercials that they have in these European countries, many of them are geared toward teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them include nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're informative. They're educational.
Yes.
And ours, you know, I do a presentation and I start off with a commercial, a Bud Light commercial that was submitted for the 2010 Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rejected. The name of the spot is called The Clothing Drive, and basically what happens in a minute is a woman in the office says, we're having a clothing drive, and if you submit some clothing, you get a free Bud Light. Well, by the time the commercial is over, most of the people in the office have taken off their clothes, but you never see nudity. When you see a close-up of a woman who has bare breasts, it's blacked out. If you see a butt, it's blacked out. If you see the genitals, they're blacked out. So the mere suggestion of nudity, you never saw nudity, made it unacceptable for United States television.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a telling feature.
It is a telling feature in how provincial we are in the United States and why we do have pregnancy rates, you said, 3 to 6 times higher than in Europe.
Yes.
And HIV
those are statistics from the World Health Organization.
Yeah, right. So we can't quibble with that.
No.
So I want to hear more. We all want to hear more about your fabulous Sex Smart videos, films.com. But let's back up a little bit and tell us how you got into sex education, because I think it's a really interesting story.
Well, when I got out of undergraduate school, I became a health educator in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And my second year teaching, New York State mandated that health education programs in middle schools, which, and I was teaching seventh grade, which was 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
We had to introduce a unit on sexually transmitted diseases. And I'll mm-hmm. never forget the first day I went into the classroom. I wrote names of diseases on the board, and I said, you get these through sexual contact. Hands went up. What do you mean by sexual contact?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I said, either sexual intercourse or oral genital contact. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So
these seventh graders were hungry for information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so this first class, I spent the entire class explaining what I meant by sexual contact.
Mm-hmm.
I walk out of the room, and the school principal was waiting for me. And he said, how did that first class go? And I remember saying to him, if I were a parent, I would object. And he said, what do you mean? I said, I'm explaining about sexuality, about sexual contact by way of disease. I can't think of a more negative approach. And he said, what do you think we should do? And I said, I think we should have a sex education program and then have another program dealing with disease. And he looked at me, he paused, and he said, let's go for it.
Oh, and you were so fortunate to have such an enlightened supervisor, or whatever he was.
Yes. I'll never forget him. His name was Rodney Penny.
Is he still alive?
Excuse me?
Is he alive still, I wonder?
Yeah, he passed away about 2 years ago. And
did he know about what you did in your life?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Good.
And I remember writing a letter to his daughter explaining, if it weren't for that conversation he and I had in the hall, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So
yeah, it's great. It's great that you were able to show appreciation even later, because that was a seminal moment, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And so we had to have a parent meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember choosing a book, which was called Love and Sex in Plain Language by Eric W. Johnson. It's still in print. And it was written on a fifth grade reading level. And I remember the kids walking around the hall with these books. And I remember kids who had had me the previous year came up to me and said, how come we didn't get that book?
Ah.
You know, kids were telling me the older students would borrow their books because they wanted to read them. And it was quite a, we got a lot of attention. And it was, we had to have parental permission.
Mm-hmm.
And I had about 153 kids. And I think three of the 153 opted not to take this class.
And perhaps they were, evangelical Christians or something like that, where it wasn't
in their
religious views to do it.
And I also remember that first year teaching, there were two Catholic churches in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, one of the priests from the church requested to talk to me.
Yes.
And he said, do you know, he said, I heard you said that masturbation is a healthy sexual outlet. And I said, I did. And he said, do you know, in the eyes of the Catholic Church, it's a sin. And I said, do you realize that 90 some odd percent of the boys in this program are sinning?
And what was his response to that?
He didn't care. So
he was a true Catholic.
Yes.
Not going to budge on that.
No, no. So, yeah. But the program was successful, and when I left, I trained the teacher who was coming in to continue the program, and it continued for a little while, and then it fell off. And at that point, I had decided to get a doctorate, and I went to NYU and started making films, actually, when I was a teacher, because there were no films. And it, at NYU, I spent 4 months in Sweden and made some films with my major professor, who was Derek Caldwell, who has since passed away, and he was a master teacher and taught me a lot. And we made some very, at the time, you know, they were very innovative, some of the early sex education films.
Very progressive.
Yes. So then,
and I know, you know, I know you, Mark, you have such a good heart and you're so generous. I'm sure you were just so grateful to these, now you've mentioned two mentors and collaborators, the last one. So then you went to Sinclair and you were with Sinclair Institute for 8 years. And my history with Sinclair Institute started in 1994 when I wrote and narrated, it was called How to Seduce Your Lover Forever. I don't think they're producing it anymore, but anyway, it was a good film. And then I went on to Couple's Guide to Great Sex Over 40, and A Couple's Guide to Oral Sex, and then there were some others, and then Great Sex for a Lifetime, which was the most recent, aimed at baby boomers. And actually, you helped me get that gig, because you said, well, Dr. Diana is a gerontologist, and she's really good at aging and sexuality. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It was an easy recommendation.
Yeah, well, I loan out and get my clients to buy by going to bettersex.com so many of these sex ed videos.
Well, since we last spoke.
Yeah.
All the Better Sex videos are on sexsmartfilms.com.
Wow, all of them.
All of them, including the older ones that you're in.
Oh, they're boy, I should do a nostalgic trip and look at them.
Yes, they're all on the website. And it's, you know, I consider the website a resource and an archive.
Yeah.
So I have older films. So if you're doing anything, if you want to look historically at sexuality education or therapy, sexsmartfilms.com is a place to go, because you can really get a sense of the history. I mean, I have a film called The Kiss, which was made in 1896.
Yes.
And I remember introducing it in the class and reading one of the reviews. And one of the reviews said, absolutely disgusting. And I said, what do you think is in this film? And you wouldn't believe what the students said. And when I showed them the film, they all groaned. And I said, this was 1896. It was illegal to kiss in public.
Ah,
so, you know, times have changed.
Did they come around? Did they get that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to realize, you know, most of the young people today, their sex education was adult films or pornographic films on the internet. Most kids are not getting sex education in schools.
And pornography is such a bad way to get educated.
Yeah, and believe me, the people who produce the adult films on not producing them to educate 11-year-olds.
No, of course not.
And the average American, the first time they view a pornographic film is about age 11 or younger. So,
and these kids have got to be so confused by the images.
Oh yeah, they're confused, and I always remember an incident. I was producing one of the Sinclair films, and I had a young, married, college-educated couple who were going to do one of the sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ready to shoot, and the guy looks at me and says, "Can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Sure." And he pulls me aside. He didn't want to say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And he whispers in my ear, "Where do you want me to come?" And I said to him, "When you and your wife make love at home, where do you come?" And he looked a little embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "Well, I just come inside of her." And I said, "We're looking for sexual realism. I want you to do exactly what you do at home."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Okay. But where do you think this young man got his education?"
Porn.
Yeah. So
where men are ejaculating on women's faces or on their breasts or
yes,
you know, the money shot, so to speak, right?
Exactly. So,
mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things about the Sinclair films. The whole library is mostly sexual realism. So
I do recommend sex smart films for my clients. I also loaned out, I think, to a guy who has, he's a young guy and he's got a lot of problems with premature ejaculation and so on. And I loaned out, I think it's one of your films, Longer and Stronger.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's one called You Can Last Longer. But both of those films are on sexsmartfilms.com.
So let's jump ahead a little bit because I want to hear a lot more about sexsmartfilms.com. But I was a member last year, and I think I let it lapse, which is a bad thing for me, but I'm going to get back to it. What do people do to join? Tell everybody.
Well,
it's pretty easy. I've been on your website.
Yeah.
It's so easy to navigate. And
There are a number of options. I mean, you can do, if you just want to watch one film, you could do a pay-per-view and a short film.
And that's $2, right?
99 cents for the shorter films. The longer films are $2 or $3.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a one-month subscription for $16.99, which gives you access to the 600 films. You could do a three-month subscription for $34.99 and a one-year subscription for $99.99. So if you use it, it's very inexpensive because you have access to all these. And lots of academics, you know, colleges use the site, and they use it in classrooms in their human sexuality courses. And lots of therapists.
Yeah, as I said at the top of the show, your sex smart films are a sex educator's dream come true. I mean, students and teachers can access so many different films. It's incredible, Dr. Mark.
Yeah, and what amazes me is the films that get used a lot. So, for example, one of the older films that I made, in fact, which is called Belly Buttons Are Navels.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a film. And by the way, there's a book that I did by the same title, Belly Buttons Are Navels, which is available on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's a book that identifies body parts from head to toe, including the genitals.
Yeah.
And when it came out, it was so controversial because one body part that I identified that had never been identified in the children's book is the clitoris. And the publisher who publishes the Dr. Seuss books wanted to publish it, but they told me, we will publish it, but you must remove the word clitoris.
Why?
Right, exactly.
It's such an important part of a woman's anatomy, my goodness.
Yeah, and you as a therapist, have you ever had a woman come to you and say, and not know she had a clitoris?
Well, I did have one some years ago from India, and also her husband had no idea where the clitoris was. So that particular session was a lot of sex education, and I brought out my little vulva puppet,
uh-huh.
A little hand puppet. So that helped, and some of Betty Dodson's drawings.
Yes.
But of course, your films would have been very helpful. I mean, yeah, we need to know. I mean, we really need to know about clitorises, that they have 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers, and a penis has 4,000, and the only function of for the clit is pleasure. We need to know all of this.
So it was so controversial, but the book is still being used today.
So, oh, good.
Yeah.
The sex ed videos that you offer are wonderfully, wonderfully helpful. And, you know, I think so often sex therapists talk about permission to discuss sexual feelings. And so a lot of these videos can help couples begin to talk about these things, not to mention trying something new.
Yes,
and that, get inspired to try something new.
And very often a therapist will tell a couple to watch a particular video together.
Right.
And they tell them, don't just sit there and watch it. If you have something to say, touch the pause button and make a comment and get a discussion going and let your partner know how you feel about a particular sexual behavior. You know, is it arousing? Is it disgusting? Is it something I want to try? Is it something I'll never try?
Right.
You know, these are the things that help couples communicate about sexual behavior.
And so many couples need help in that area. They have no idea how to talk about sex.
And rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep in mind, we were brought up, and I'm saying we as a culture, we were brought up and taught very well that sex is something you're not supposed to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first started teaching sex education, I noticed when kids in the class were identifying the genitals, I would get all these different names. And one day I said to them, let's go around the room and let's tell everyone what the names for the male and female genitals you used in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were 25 kids in the classroom, they were close to 25 different names for both the male and female genitals. And then I finished. I said, for now on, we're identifying female genitals as the vulva, male genitals, penis, and testicles. And we looked at diagrams and looked at all the parts and said, now let's use the correct name. So
it's surprising to me how many people, I mean, my hairdresser recently, and she's a very enlightened person, she's cutting my hair and she's talking about, because she knows what I do, and so we often have sexual discussions, but she's talking about vaginas, Betty Dodson and vaginas, and I said, well, it would be more correctly called vulvas. And I remember, it was many years ago, but I was on the show briefly with my friend Barbie Benton, name drop, okay, Hugh Hefner at the mansion. So these three girlfriends at the time, in one episode, we're all talking about their vaginas, and what they were really meaning was their vulvas. And let's get it right here. That the vagina is inside and the vulva are all the parts outside, the clitoris, the labia, and so on. But people don't always get that straight.
Yeah, and when you want to communicate your sexual likes, I think it's helpful to be able to identify the parts of your body that you want touched or not touched.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's pretty, pretty important. So so with your Sex Smart films, you have education, and it's so easy to navigate on your website, and therapy, and research.
And we have the three major categories are education, research, and therapy.
Right.
And then under each category, there are subcategories.
Right.
And some of the films, for example, are divided by gender identity, by sexual orientation. So, for example, we made these sex therapy films called Sensate Focus, which were designed by Masters and Johnson, the therapist. And there are seven exercises. And we made the same exact film three times. Once with two gay couples, once with two lesbian couples, and once with two heterosexual couples.
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference in the films are the pronouns. So I think it's important that people have films that they can identify with.
Yes, and I suggest Sensate Focus or caressing exercises to most of my clients in the beginning, most of the couples.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that one of the most popular films is the first Sensate Focus exercise, which deals with sexual anatomy and sexual response. So it's sort of an anatomy and physiology lesson of the genitals.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that goes back to our lack of sex education as children.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, I look in Scandinavia. In fact, in the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
this Danish writer and educator, Per Holm Knudsen, wrote a book, The True Story of How Babies Are Made, and it was geared to five-year-olds. And about 8 years ago, I contacted him and requested, could I make an animated film? So we made an animated film, The True Story of How Babies Are Made, and I remember once showing it at a conference, and a woman came up to me and said, do you think I could show this in a high school?
Yes.
And you know, this is geared to 4- and 5-year-olds. So
right.
It's very interesting to see what's perfectly acceptable in Denmark. And, you know, it's such a question here.
I have recommended that film on your website to any number of my clients with small children.
Yeah.
It's just great sex education.
If you're going to show a film to a child, make sure you watch it alone first.
Absolutely.
So
that's true for any kind of sex education.
Yes.
So, Mark, I thought we should spend a little time, and I noticed that it's up on your website, sexsmartfilms.com, and it has to do with consent.
Uh-huh.
And that's really in the news these days, and so I think we should talk a little bit about this. You have it on your website.
Yeah, under the education category.
Education.
I think I have about 17. I'll tell you. Oh, I have 21 films that deal with consent. And it's an important subject. You know, I've always thought it was important, but now it's in the news, so it's getting a lot more attention, which I think is a good thing.
It's a very good thing, because even committed partners have trouble saying what they want or don't want, and much less people hooking up with an acquaintance or a stranger. We seem to be especially unable to talk about sex when we're having it or about to have it. And so I think that that we have to look, because does anyone believe that no person will ever let their sexual drive run over someone else's rights? I don't think so. What's our plan to stop it?
Well, I think
yeah,
education.
And yes, we got to talk about it, don't we?
Yes, I think education is a key.
Yeah.
When I hear some of my users who are college professors talk about the issue of consent on college campuses, I'm thinking, did these young people not get any information on it? Do they have no idea they're doing something wrong and how harmful it is to, be sexually abusive? So it's an important topic, and there are over 20 films on the site that have to do with consent.
You even have that Stanford guy who was accused about a year and a half ago.
What? I'm sorry?
The Stanford student who was accused, you have him on your website.
I forget who he is. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. But I've forgotten his name, too, but I clicked on it, and it showed Stanford in the background. And it was a big deal, because he was drunk, and he raped his the girl, and it was all brought out, and it was terrible.
Ugh.
And he came from a nice family and so on and so forth. And, of course, his life was ruined because he was drunk, and he was not asking for consent.
Terrible.
And I think that's on your website. I saw his little face.
Oh.
Okay.
It might be. I have 600 films. So
I know.
Every one of them.
So it seems like some men and even some women find talking about sex and even condoms cringeworthy, and they say that these kinds of discussions are hard because they could break the mood. Oh, dear.
Uh-huh.
I say to these folks, well, that's a lame excuse, because you shouldn't be having sex with somebody that you can't communicate well with, right?
Absolutely.
And there are too many people. Of course, alcohol is the vehicle. Right. So, but it's a big problem, and I think that your Sex Smart films, and you have more and more, even since last year, more and more consent additions.
Yeah, we try to stay up to date on the trendy topics, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always adding films. And I have users who, there's a feature on the site where if you have a film, you could upload it to the site.
Mm.
And in fact, I just got contacted by someone in Finland who has a film that he wants to upload to the site. So I have to respond to that. So it's interesting to see the cross-cultural issues that and the way they are addressed.
Well, indeed. But, you know, in general, we're talking about consent here. A passion is no excuse for bad decisions. Everyone can say, do you want me? Do you want to make love? Are you ready now? And then the woman needs to be encouraged to say, I do not want to do this with you. That's all about consent, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to hear the stories about how different couples communicate whether or not they want to have sex, you know, and it's, for some, it's very difficult.
Yeah. Why do you think it's so difficult? I have my own ideas, but it's so difficult for so many people to talk about sex.
Well, one of the things I say over and over is we've been taught not to talk about sex.
Right.
So here, you know, they come and see a sex therapist and you're telling them you need to express your intimate desires, where for 30 years they weren't supposed to, or thought they weren't supposed to talk about it. And now all of a sudden you're saying you got to be open and let your partner know how you feel about sexual behavior or different sexual behaviors.
So, Dr. Mark, let's transition to trans. Your wonderful film that has already won awards, and I've been talking to you about trans for some years, and it is an incredible film. So talk a little bit about the history of your film Trans and where it is now, and then before end of the program, we're also going to talk about Love After War.
Great. Well, the first thing I have to tell you about Trans, which came out in late 2012, 2 weeks ago, it's on Amazon Prime. And you know, Amazon has film lists. So they have the top dramas, the top comedies, the top horror films.
Yeah.
They have a list of the top LGBT films. Mm-hmm. Trans is the number 2 LGBT film on Amazon Prime.
Wow.
So, and if you go look up the film on Amazon, there are probably 220 some odd reviews, most of which are 5 stars. So the film came to be, I was on a committee with Dr. David Satcher, who was the former Surgeon General. And when he left Washington, he went to Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta, and he established this committee on sexual health. And I was on the committee for 5 years, and another person who was a surgeon, Dr. Christine McGinn, who is transgender and does the surgery, she came up to me one day and said, there's a film company in Los Angeles that wants to do a film about me. And I was living in Pasadena at the time. And I said, great, you have a great story. It would be a great film. And she said to me, I do not want them to do it. And I said, why not? She said, I researched this company, and if they do it, it'll be like an episode of the Jerry Springer Show.
Wasn't she a wise, perceptive woman?
So she said, would you do it? And that began a 3-year journey. And keep in mind, this film came out before there was the TV show Transparent, before Orange is the New Black, before Caitlyn Jenner. So when it came out, it was pretty out there.
Revolutionary.
People were saying, you know, why did you choose that subject?
And now it's out there. Truly out there.
And the film
I want to just add here that I'm seeing a couple and their six-year-old daughter was born a male and has been transitioning. And she's always known that she was feeling like a female. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about where I live, Seattle, is that the Seattle Children's Hospital and other places, they have groups, therapy groups for parents of trans kids, and they have therapy groups for trans kids. Isn't that great?
Yes, it's wonderful.
I know, it's so enlightening. It's just amazing. But your film was kind of ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and the film has saved lives. I remember.
Oh, yes.
Remember one day I was in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and Dr. McGinn has a bed and breakfast for her patients, and she put me up in the bed and breakfast.
Oh.
And I came down for breakfast, and a woman came up to me and said, "Are you Mark?" And I said, "Yes."
Mm.
And she gave me a big hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, I looked at her like, what's this all about?
Yeah.
And she said, my daughter had surgery yesterday.
Uh-huh.
When she told me she was transgender, I wasn't on board.
Hmm.
Someone gave me your film. So she said, thank you.
Hmm.
So those are the kinds of things that
make your life worth living.
Yeah. Film makes a difference. And
oh, yeah.
So, and it's used in colleges and medical schools and by the general public. And since
it's a wonderful film.
And since it's on Amazon and it's on iTunes and it's on Sex Smart Films, it's readily available, so anyone can see it. So, which is a good thing.
It's a very good thing. And we've spoken about your film Trans, that these people, these kids, they feel they were born this way, and the suicide rate is 41% higher.
There was a study done with 6,000 transgender individuals, and one of the mm-hmm. questions was, have you ever seriously contemplated or attempted suicide? And 41% responded yes.
Mm.
And I think if you ask that question to the general population, it's less than 2%. So,
of course. So there's been so much discrimination and rejection. And
it's not something, you know, I believe there's a biological factor that mm-hmm. makes someone transgender. In fact, we did a screening at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and there were close mm-hmm. to 200 people mm-hmm. at the screening. And one of the 50-some-odd-year-old transgender people who was in the film was on the panel after the film for the Q&A.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
And one of the students asked, why did you choose to be this way?
Mm.
And there was silence in the room. And she looked at this student and said, and this is a well-educated, successful person.
Yeah.
Said in front of 200 people, who the fuck would choose this?
Ah, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Who the fuck would choose this?
Yes,
the rejection, the discrimination.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, you know, I think transgender issues today are like African-American issues in the 1960s.
Yeah.
I think we're going through, we had the civil rights movement in the 60s. We have a transgender movement today. And both, we have a long way to go. But we've made lots of,
Your film Trans really has helped the transition a lot.
Yes, thank you. And
you're welcome. And
going on now.
And you know it's incredible. So let's transition to Love After War. I spoke to Dr. Mitch Tepper last month on this program. And so you two collaborated. Let's just refresh our listening audience about how it was conceived and also the 1978 film.
Coming home,
yeah.
Well,
so how did you and Dr. Mitch get together on this, collaborate?
Well, this was Mitch's concept.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come to me a few years ago and said, do you want to make a film? And I had, I worked 3 years on Trans, and
mm-hmm.
I told him no. And then he and his son and a film student shot one interview, and we were at a conference, and he said, I shot an interview. Could you take a look at it?
Mm.
And I remember sitting...
Was that the burn victim?
No, that was not the burn victim. And I watched the interview, and I heard the story, and as tears were rolling down my eyes,
yeah,
I said, all right, I'll help. So that's how...
I love that about you, Mark. You're sentimental, and you're generous, and you're compassionate. Yes, yes, yes. And that shows up in your filmmaking.
Yeah, well, I'm at the stage of my life where I want to make films that make a difference.
Of course.
So... I've been approached lots where people are saying, you want to make a film about this or that. So this one, I feel, will make a difference. I mean, we've shot 6 or 7 interviews of couples who are either physically or mentally traumatized from being in the military. And it's the first time where I'm on a set doing interviews and tears are rolling down my face. When you hear a young man gets out of high school, joins the Marines, is in a training drill he's being gassed and the gas catches on fire and 53 Marines are running to safety. And he's in safety and sees one of his buddies has fallen and is on fire, and he goes back to help him, and he catches on fire and gets burned over 80% of his body, including his face, and these are second and third degree burns.
Oh, my God.
So for the next... So he has a 19-year-old young man.
Yeah.
For the next 12 years, he can go out on a date, and he said... On camera, he said, look at this face. Who'd want to go out with me? He's all burnt scars.
Mm-hmm.
And after 12 years, he met a woman who worked in a burn unit, and they started dating, and they got married, and they have a child.
I love that story. And that's that is in your film.
Yes, yes.
And that's great. Happy ending. But for so many... There are no happy endings.
Well, most
and sexuality
of them,
just is not discussed in the VA or other places.
Well, we have mostly happy endings. There are some that aren't happy, but
yeah.
And in doing research for the film, for every person who's got in front of the camera, I spoke to people who wouldn't get in front of the camera and had great stories.
Mm-hmm.
One young man who was an artist, in fact, made a music video with a celebrity and got an Emmy Award. And when he went into the military, he was made a combat photographer. And I remember him telling me, I'm seeing some of the most horrible things anyone could possibly imagine, and my job is to take pictures of them.
Yeah.
And there are days he doesn't get out of bed. And so I wanted him to tell his story, but he can't get in front of a camera. And so
his PTSD is that traumatic.
Yes. Yes.
And you just to go back to coming home from 1978 with Jane Fonda and Bruce Dern and John Voight.
And keep in mind,
so PTSD wasn't known or it didn't have a label.
Well,
right?
It had different names. You know, yeah. George Carlin, the comedian, does a routine where, you know, there was a time where they said someone was shell shock. Today, PTSD. And he talked about how the terms has evolved over the years. So, but one of the stories, one of the fellas in the film was shot in the temple. And the bullet went through both his eyes and he's blind. And here he is married. And he talked, you know, we were talking about attraction before. And he said, I'm missing one thing. And I said, what was that? He said, well, you know, sometimes a guy will look at his wife or girlfriend and say, ooh, you're looking good tonight. And he said, I can never say that. I don't know how she's I don't know how she's dressed. So for us to figure out, you know, if she makes an erotic gesture, he doesn't see it. Mm-hmm. So they've had to figure out a way to let each other know when they want to be sexual. So they can't communicate with just vision.
Right, right. Wow, there's so many levels of communication here and so many. I'm so touched by all of this. I donated money for Your Love After War. Let's tell people how they can do that because that's important.
We received a $50,000 matching grant.
Yeah.
The good news is we received that grant. The bad news is we have to raise $50,000 before they give us the matching.
Yeah.
So if you go to loveafterwar.org? I think so.
I think so, too.
And you can see a little trailer, and you can, if you want to make a donation, there's a way to do it. But you can watch the trailer, and some of these stories you will see.
Yeah. For me, it was a very easy donation to make.
Well, thank you.
Believe in you, so believe in Dr. Mitch, so believe in these vets who are suffering. I want them to be better and to have a sexual life. I just feel, right now I'm touching my chest. I feel so badly for these vets. And then sexuality is not very well addressed, is it?
Well, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but, you know, we were taught very well not to speak about sex.
Mm.
So, and that doesn't exclude professionals who are treating injuries. You know, they have not been trained to talk about sexuality, and they're trained to deal with the injuries. So the guy who has both his legs blown off and one of his testicles blown off, they treat him for his physical wounds, and then he goes home to his wife, and they have to deal with it. And this is one of the stories in the film, and it tells how they dealt with it. And they had to do a lot on their own to get the kind of help they needed.
Of course.
This guy's wife is pregnant. Or, I'm sorry, she was pregnant when we shot it. She had the baby already. So,
this is a nice story. Yeah.
There are some good stories.
Yeah. So. Well, Mark, you're doing such important work. And, you know, for years I've admired you. And I'm so glad you're back on this program because you have so many things to say that are really, really important. And
well,
I should warn you, you're welcome. I should warn you that Progressive Radio Network stops us about a few minutes before the top of the hour. Anyway, I just really admire you so much, Mark, and
Well, thank you.
I'm so grateful that you're back on this program again.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me share some of these stories. I hope, you know, your listeners will check out some of these films, and if they need any help, an email address is on the website, and they can contact me directly.
All right, so there's the final music. Thank you again, Mark.
Thank you, Diana. Take care.
We'll
now.
Be in touch. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.